Introducing the return of the golden age of American radio. It's the Mischke Broadcast, radio's renegade outpost, transmitting live from St. Paul, courtesy of the Black Sheep Broadcasting Network.
There are, by my estimation, about six main reactions to today's attacks. One or another surely fits you. Here they are, the way I see it, the six major takes on the horror of the day. Reaction number one, the angry vitriolic diatribe response, kill the bastards. The response that comes out of a flaming, red-hot desire for vengeance. That's the this-is-war response, the give-em-hell response. Pure anger. Reaction number two, prayer, a silence, whispered thoughts here and there, turning to one's religious convictions for solace, feelings of empathy, sympathy, grieving. It's a much more passive reaction, but just as powerful. Reaction number three, confusion, utter confusion, as if the world had suddenly been turned upside down. A loss of moorings, a displacement, unable to sort it all out, nothing to hang on to. This is the, my God, what is happening? Response, very prevalent today. Reaction number four, the careful, cautious, prudent response. Let's not jump to conclusions. Let's see what we learn in the coming days. Don't act rashly. Knee-jerk responses will serve no one. Be wise, be methodical. Don't let emotions take over. Build a case. Make it stick. Move toward resolution, toward apprehension, and punishment of those responsible. Reaction number five, pointing fingers. How did we allow ourselves to be so ill-prepared? Where was intelligence on this? We should have taken care of these terrorists years ago. This nation has been too soft, too weak, too long. And statements I heard today from a host here at this station, it's these nuns protesting at the School of the Americas and these presidents who spend their time on housing and education that are leaving this nation weak defensively. This reaction looks for a scapegoat. And reaction number six, the historic perspective response, the big picture outlook. This view sees little that's new in today's events. This view holds that this kind of thing has been happening for years, and our country simply has been too asleep or too busy with shopping and TV to take notice. This view, view number six, holds that it's a terribly violent world, be it Northern Ireland, the Middle East, Sierra Leone, Kosovo, Somalia, Central America, China, North Korea, Algeria, attacks, explosions, death, loss of innocent life, common. Violent retribution, aggression, retaliation, the story of day-to-day life, somewhere on the planet all the time. This is just new for us, but not new for people, not new for children of this planet, and women, and old people, who mean to hurt no one. This is the horrifically violent world we live in, which operates parallel to the profoundly beautiful, loving world we also live in. They are the two sides of the same coin. There were thousands of rapes in this country this week alone, hundreds and hundreds of murders, child abuse, neglect, wife-beating, assaults of every kind, but there was something else as well. While these planes this morning were barreling into the World Trade Center, elsewhere, in all parts of the nation, Heroic deeds of selflessness were ongoing. Beautiful, healthy babies were being born to tearful parents who never before felt such joy. Lives were being saved. Altruistic acts of profound kindness were altering the future of thousands who up until that point had been down and out and desperate. The same sort of selfless acts that can be found tonight in Northern Ireland, in the Middle East. It's the stuff that doesn't make the news. Always remember the good is ongoing right alongside the evil. And it's just as present today, both evil and good, as it was at any time in the last century. Yeah, thousands died violently today, and there's much that has to be done because of that. But the world didn't change today. No. Thousands of Americans died. But thousands died violently last week. Not all together on the same street, not at the same time. And the perpetrators didn't get labeled as terrorists. But violence and death is nothing new. And I think there's some sense that there's been a great change today, and I'm not sure that it's the change some people think it is. Yeah, innocent women and children were targeted today. Innocent women and children were targeted at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. This isn't new. Now, the conditions are different. We didn't know we were at war with anyone today. The Japanese started the war in the other case, but in terms of tragic loss of life, if you're a six-month-old baby or a nursing mother or a retired grandma, the death is just as tragic, no matter what country you're in. Nothing new happened today. So I contend the deaths are as common today as they have been in the past century or so. They're just in this country now. The world didn't change today. It proved how much it intends to stay the same. That's what it did today. It showed us that it intends to stay every bit the way it was in the last century. We got away for a long time with sort of a fairyland existence in this country. Nowhere in the world did anyone live as high off the hog in as peaceful and free a state as we. No one. We were the top of the food chain. Now we got hit. And we got hit by a little jealousy, I think, today. I think by a little desire to take a swing at the big dog. But hell, that's not new in this world either. That's an old story. World didn't change today. Some people just woke up. And Americans are now being forced to join the club. What's the club? The club where you don't get to escape the pain and the horror and the tragedy of violence. You have to play the game like everyone else. And we're in the game now. Our move. What are we going to do? What are you going to do? What am I going to do? What's the president going to do? What are the newspapers going to do? What are our clergymen and women going to do? What are the kids going to do? Which reaction of the big six is your reaction? Which matches your state of mind right now? Go ahead and let it out. That's what this show's for tonight. But I'll tell you one thing. Pain and suffering has a role in this world. It has a reason for being here. And for some odd reason, and don't ask me why this is, but it's how we grow. And a tremendous amount of good is going to come out of this day, believe it or not, at a great cost. But it's always that way. Always that way. What I expect to see is George Bush rise to greatness. And I'm very serious on that, and you know how much I don't particularly care for this guy. But I expect to see him rise to greatness. Great presidents don't walk into the office. They're made, forged through trial. You can ask Lincoln, Roosevelt, Truman. George W. Bush came into this White House weak, barely qualified. I expect he'll leave one day being viewed as one of the greats. And the events of today are where his greatness will be born. There's no going back for him now. He's going to have to enter kind of a new level of manhood. One quite far removed from what he was, say, just a decade ago. And he's going to do it. I'm confident of that. Because he has to. He has no choice. He's been called for this moment in history, and he has to rise to it, and he will. And we will watch the transformation. We'll witness it. What other great things will come from this? Well, jokingly, for a couple of years now, I've been saying we need a war, we need a depression. The gist of my point has been, we're a nation asleep, almost drugged. Well, we're wide awake today. This country and what it stands for will be renewed through this, reinvigorated, refocused. Priorities will shift and be put in proper order at a great cost. But again, it's always this way. One more thing. There was a tremendous amount of talk today about praying for the victims and their families. All over the media, there was talk. Our thoughts and prayers are with the victims and their families. A fraction of those who mouthed the words will actually hit their knees and give an evening of heartfelt prayer to those who suffer. A fraction. To that fraction, to those folks who really drop what they're doing tonight, go into a bedroom, close the door, and pray to God to help the injured and the families of the dead, I tip my hat to you. Your reaction is as powerful as anything our president will do tonight. Now, as I said, I'm going to take your calls. This is the way it's going to work tonight. There are no commercials. However, we are going to go to updates. We're going to go to one here in about a minute. And these updates will basically take the place of commercials. We'll move in and out of them the same way we would move in and out of commercial breaks. And the rest of the evening, from now until 10 o'clock, I'll just take your calls. This is the best use of this particular medium, I think, at a time like this. So that's what we'll do. Right now there's a line open. Looks like four are filled. One's open. Kodiak, there's a 20 break for an update, and we come back, and when's the next one?
Next one is at 30:30, which will be followed by Bob Berglund with some local news, and then another one again at 50.
Okay.
And then at the top of the hour, we'll, of course, go to ABC News like we always do.
Do you know how long we cut away for?
The breaks are generally about a minute and a half to 2 minutes.
Okay.
Three?
No,
minute and a half to... They're not timed perfectly. So.
Okay. 646 Talk is the number in St. Paul. Outside the capital city, 877-615-1500. 877-615-1500. I've said my piece, I'll let you say yours. Broadcast. Take your calls now. Start with Dave. Hi, David.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, some years back, these Arab countries, they hit Lebanon, killed 250-something of our soldiers. We never got those responsible. Then the Khomeini, under him, Iran kidnapped our ambassadors and that. We never really did nothing to them. Then we had the coal. Then we had the Saudi Arabia during the Gulf War where the soldiers got killed. Never had retaliation yet. Well, finally, now this time, the cards are on the table. We either have to act or we're just being a fool. Well, we know who did it. They've already got stuff leaking out on the radio now. It's that Bin Laden. We're going to have to get him and liquidate him. But number two is they took out our symbol of economic power, the trade buildings. That was important to them. And the Palestinians are dancing in the street and they're shooting their guns in the air. Well, what is a symbol to these Arab Muslim people? Mecca. Well, I would like to be nice to these, even what they've done to us. I'd like to be nice to these Arab people. They waste a lot of time praying east every day to Mecca. I say we drop the bomb on Mecca. They got no use for the, they don't have to pray anymore. We saved them a lot of time. Mm-hmm. So we take out Bin Laden and we take out Mecca. Mm-hmm. And if they ever try anything like this again, God help them. Thank you.
Could I ask you a question? Okay. Oh, okay. My hope is that the majority of you realize that Islam, one of the major world religions, is filled with all sorts of sects, all sorts of branches, all sorts of different beliefs, much as Christianity is. And Mecca is a holy place to a lot of very peaceful people. We obviously don't want to start blowing up Mecca. I hope. Todd.
Mr. Mischke, how are you doing this evening?
I'm fine.
Yeah, I want to talk to you, and since you're in the media, you could help explain this to me. Today, earlier, I don't know if you discussed this or not, but when there's a big tragedy thing going on, why is the news on every channel telling us where a president's going to be? You understand what I'm saying?
I assume the answer they would give is that the people in this country who look to their president to lead would like to know, number one, that he is somewhere acting on their behalf, doing something about it. Number two, that he perhaps is safe. Number three, that he will be going somewhere to do something that will perhaps alleviate some of their fears. I think in any situation, you would look to your leader for all sorts of things, and knowing where he is might be part of feeling a little more comfortable. I don't think they're giving away any big secrets or anything like that.
Well, truly, I can somewhat understand that and agree with that. But if there's, you know, terroristic acts so portrayed going on in this in the United States, first time in 60 years that we've been hit, I can say, you know, he could go somewhere without the news following him and saying, okay, now he's in Omaha, or he's in St. Louis and stuff like that. Don't you feel that?
I think today in the United States, the single most protected citizen was George W. Bush.
Oh, I totally agree with you. But
and I don't think there is anything his handlers would have let out to the media that would have compromised that safety. So I don't think his handlers were at all concerned about what the news media was saying. But well, I understand that you are.
Well, yeah. I mean, just because, you know, I look, you know, it doesn't matter if I like the guy or not.
Yeah.
I'm looking to him that, you know, what's his response? How is he going to protect us? What is he doing to protect the people of the United States, people that are hurt? And if people are giving out information where he's at, that doesn't that potentially could lead to danger.
Yeah, I don't think so, but I would think his own people around him would raise that point if that were the case, and I don't hear them saying that. I don't think he was in any danger today.
Well, we didn't think that no one was going to crash a plane into three buildings, now did we?
Actually, we did.
Oh, we did know that.
I heard
it happen.
I heard again and again today, and this certainly jibes with my own thinking, that this is sad, this is tragic, this is horrible, but the last thing this should be is surprising.
Well, fill me in, because I've been working all day, okay. And I was getting bits and pieces, and then I finally came home
and sat down. It's not surprising in the sense that they have known that the United States is targeted by these terrorist groups, sophisticated terrorist groups, and that something big was on the horizon. They knew Osama bin Laden had been quiet too long. They didn't know what it was going to be. They didn't know where it was going to be. But they knew something was going to happen somewhere on this planet to some U.S. property. I think we've known that the story of the 21st century is going to be terrorist attacks. That's what we're going to be looking at. I've read this for a long time. It's a lot different, though, to say we know when and where.
All right.
But I appreciate your call. Thanks.
Well, thank you.
All right. Who's next here? Can I just keep hitting the next button, or is that maybe not work? Let me see if it works. It doesn't work. Okay. I like to take people in order so they don't wait on hold too long. Steve.
Yeah, how you doing, Tommy?
Good.
Hey, I just wanted to make the point that I don't think this is the most tragic day in U.S. history. I think it's a tragedy what happened today. I'm sad about it. But I think the most tragic day was the beginning of the Civil War. Because in the Civil War, we had nowhere to turn. We were brother fighting against brother, a nation against itself. And at least now we can come together as a nation, we can rally up, and we can go after the people that are did these atrocities.
Oh, I wholeheartedly agree with you. Any battle on any day during the Civil War where we were killing each other was certainly as bad, if not worse, than anything happening today. No, I don't think it was the worst day in our history. I just think that it woke a lot of people up. I think what today did is woke people up. I don't think the world changed today, but hopefully for the better, America will change. And I think there's a way to look at this where we weren't going to avoid these guys. They've been waiting for it from anthrax. They've been waiting for it from all sorts of different things. It's been talked about as though it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. I think we're just a little surprised that we're as susceptible as we are. But that's the waking up, and that will save lives in the future.
I hope it does.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Things aren't going to be as free around here, I don't think. I think things are going to get real restrictive. I think the days of it being as open a society, I don't think those days will be back again for quite a while. The coming and going in and out of this country, the visiting, the way you travel, the ease of travel. I don't know when that will ever be the same again. We'll trade that for a little security at night, for sleeping a little better. But in many ways, it just seems it's sort of our turn. Not that it has to be. But in a way, historically, again, taking that sixth perspective, when I listed the perspectives at the beginning, historically, who gets away for their whole run without something like this? What country? The pendulum swings and it's our turn. We'll be back.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, with local news, Bob Berglund.
Thousands of air travelers are stranded at Twin Cities International Airport as well. Universities and other schools canceled classes today. Shopping malls closed. We're told the Mall of America is closed indefinitely. Government offices sent workers home or restricted access to buildings all over the state. Precautions were taken even though there was no specific threat here. The state has an emergency operations center open only for informational purposes. State Public Safety Commissioner Charlie Weaver met with reporters this afternoon.
Minnesota is not in a state of emergency. We have opened the emergency operations center, and we'll keep that operation open for the next 48 hours, throughout tonight and throughout tomorrow night. To make sure that people have good information fast and that it's accurate.
The 12,000 members of the Minnesota National Guard are on alert, but they have not been activated. Lieutenant Colonel Dennis Shields says they're ready to help keep state systems functioning or go on active duty if the federal government launches a response to the attacks.
You know, over the last 10 years, National Guard units, both Army and Air National Guard units, have been utilized pretty extensively in federal operations, and you know, it kind of goes with the territory.
Like many of Minnesota's national political figures, Senator Paul Wellstone was safe in Washington today. Safe, but stunned.
This is just truly the most horrifying day I can remember of my, you know, adult life as an American.
Former President George Bush was grounded in Wisconsin today. He was scheduled to give a speech to St. Paul companies tonight. Events like today's in New York frequently lead to other idiocy, and that was the case when a bomb scare came into the VA hospital in Minneapolis today, a large inconvenience for the staff.
Taking care of a patient in the parking lot is not certainly the ideal, but all of our physicians and nurses, of course, are out here with them, and we're doing the very best we can.
The scare and a couple of others were hoaxes. The Star Tribune produced a 14-page extra that bannered the word terror in nearly 4-inch letters over the smaller headline, U.S. hit by planes at major sites. And headed on Twin City streets by this afternoon, the Pioneer Press sent two special editions to Metro newsstands, one at midday and an update about 3. The first carried the headline, Day of Infamy. The later extra, the head Under Attack, both in letters about 2.5 inches high. Suppose somebody had diversion in mind. A man robbed Twin City Federal in Roseville just before noon today, described as a white male in his late 20s, blonde blue, medium build, wearing blue jeans, a long-sleeved shirt, and a baseball cap. Here is the forecast from Channel 5. Partly cloudy and cool tonight with a low of 57 degrees. Breezy tomorrow with a high of 72. No rain in the forecast for the next couple of days. It's 76 degrees right now.
He said, man, you won't live through the night. Took my body back to mama. She said, Jesus, can you make it all right? Jesus, can you make it all right? Get my head down to the drugstore.
Listening to the Mishki broadcast. Taking your calls on the events of the day, 646 Talk in St. Paul, long distance 877 615 1500. Charlie? Kodiak, my phone's not working.
It should be. Everything's up.
Charlie?
No. Richard.
Richard?
It says Charlie here on line 4, Kodiak.
It says Richard on my screen.
I'm sorry, Mr. Mishki.
You ought to come and look at this.
Can you hear me?
It says Charlie right here. Just want to clear this up just because this could be a nightmare the rest of the evening.
Oh, absolutely.
Right now on line 4, it says Richard, Kodiak. He's left his seat. Can't believe it says Charlie here. Right there, bud. Line 4, Charlie. You're going to be Charlie.
I'll be Charlie. Right. For the sake of argument, I'll be happy to be Charlie. Thomas, I've spent the day listening to talk radio and the news and despairing of finding a reflection of my reaction to the situation. I would hope to be as articulate as what I just tuned in when I chanced to flip you on in the kitchen. An earlier talk show host was ranting about how we need to be the big guy without apologies and making reference to Iraq and Iran with no sense of irony.
Right. I think the terrifying statement made by that talk host that left me wondering when this stuff is ever going to end was the straightforward statement with no qualifications that American lives are simply more important than any other lives on the planet, and Americans are more important people than anyone else on the planet, and that's why any killing of anyone else to save an American life is justified. Now, this is from a, and what terrifies me about this is from a program that's quite popular with the Christian right, and I'm just wondering where that is in the New Testament.
Well, figuring in with the right to life and pro-capital punishment, it's all a stew I don't understand, and I was raised conservative Baptist. So, on another station that is making a play to be the big right-leaning talk radio of the Twin Cities, I've heard things that are so scary I have to think it's marketing. I have to equate it with the top 40 hits on you know, programmed nationally syndicated radio shows. That, and
well, you can if you want to.
No, I mean, no, I don't.
No,
want
I was
to.
Going to say one could, if one wanted to, pander to the emotions of the public on something like this and garner quite an audience because people enjoy that kind of venting. What would be popular at this station, I think, is something more along the lines of what one of my callers argued just a few minutes ago, that we ought to bomb Mecca.
I heard the first one.
That's the same sort of thinking that's going to have people of Middle Eastern descent who've lived their entire lives in this country beat up and possibly killed over the coming days.
Yes.
There already was a... Well, I'll give you an example. I have a friend, he is Iranian, and he runs a store down in Ohio,
mm-hmm.
and he tells people he's Turkish. He figures it saves his life. He's got a buddy cross town, Iranian. He runs another store. He tells people he's Greek, figures he's going to live a bit longer because of it. This was before today.
Yeah.
This is just in general. It's just known in the community, if you are in a Middle Eastern community, that you should come up with another...
Background,
just to kind of get through
your... Oklahoma bombing,
yeah.
That was a very hot process to be going yeah. after foreigners in our native soil.
I mean, the ignorance of people who think that Islam is behind this. I bet you Eddie Gein went to church quite a bit and knelt and thanked Jesus for his blessings. You know, any of the Christian holy sites because of what he did. I don't know if anyone's ever studied Sufi, the Sufi Muslims, but they're the most peaceful, loving folks you'll ever meet in your life. We Christians could learn a lot from them, but those guys are Islamic and have to die. Or so I hear.
Mr. Mishki,
yeah.
you have... given me an Edward R. Murrow moment of my radio.
Well, you know, I did study at the Eddie Murrow School of Big Time Broadcasting.
It was a good thing. It was larger than yourself, sir.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. You take care.
Courage.
Courage. Now it doesn't hang up. I'll tell you what will be a nightmare will be if I have problems with the phones tonight, because that's all I'm doing tonight. So we move now to... Pat.
Hello, Tommy.
Yes.
Well, first, I too want to praise you for that, I'll call it an audio essay, which I give the title of, in your words, The World Didn't Change Today. It was the most sane thing I'd heard all day on the news.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I wonder, can I get a tape of it? I didn't tape my
sure.
tonight.
Sure. I'd be happy to send it to you. I can put you on hold. And
okay, before you do that, I want to say something else. May I?
Yeah, sure.
I'm very glad to hear that last call you had. He also had good sense. And may I just tell you what my theory is? Weird though it may be, I don't think it's weird. Do you realize that today is the 3-month anniversary to the day and to the hour of the, execution of Timothy McVeigh? Now, he and his group are very big on anniversaries, as you know. And I should think, it sounds to me as if that's the sort of thing that those people would do. A professional terrorist, I'll call them, would, I don't think, from a foreign entity, would be so stupid as to rouse the ire of the United States, because look what we can do to them.
But they do it. But they do it all the time. I mean,
Well, not to this extent. I mean, they're coming in on our sacred soil.
But you're
also
talking about people. If in fact this is the radical element of the say the Taliban or the I don't know if you've read the stories, the horrible stories of how they train their children. These poor kids are taken at a very young age and taught nothing but to hate. And that if they ever can take out any Americans, God love them, they'll go straight to heaven. And this crew has been shooting out terrorists left and right. Your suicide bombers come from this group. And this kind of madness there's no thinking that, oh no, we might upset the Americans. If these people don't mind flying into a building where they're sitting at the wheel, what the hell do they care if we drop nuclear weapons? They have no concern about that whatsoever.
But what did Timothy McVeigh and his ilk think when they bombed the Oklahoma building, the Murrow building in Oklahoma? And they're no strangers to the glory of suicide, a martyr's death. This sounds to me.
Personally, I don't think this has anything to do with Tim McVeigh. I understand your anniversary idea, but I don't consider 3 months an anniversary.
Well, they might, though. They might think the time is right.
I don't think they're big enough to pull something like this off. The militia guys in this country are mainly a lot of fat guys who drink Budweiser at 3-2 joints. This is not something they're able to pull off. I think, you know, they could get fertilizer, but what farmer can't? But this is a bit too sophisticated for them, and I think the links are already there. I think they're already connecting it to Bin Laden. I won't be surprised at all to find somewhere along the line either someone squealing or someone flat out taking credit for this somewhere in a hideout in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Syria, somewhere. That part I don't think is going to change too much.
But also, I think you mentioned they don't have the sophistication to do this sort of thing. I think that it was a rather sloppy job, because if I were going to bomb anything in this country...
Let me tell you something. You tell me another way that someone can take down two buildings of that size. Give me another way. Let's not, because that's the story of the day. I could give you a lifetime to figure out how to drop those buildings, and you couldn't do it. Not only couldn't you do it, about the time you were figuring it out, they'd nail you, because you'd screw up somewhere and in sloppy fashion expose yourself. The sophistication is, first of all, in the fact that they didn't even get caught ahead of time. Second of all, it's extraordinary. There isn't a bomb that they own that could drop it the way these planes dropped it.
But if I were going to do it, I think, not that I'm an expert in this, and I wouldn't do it, I don't think I would, first destroy the communications. Here we had television and radio all day. That's the thing to do, cut off the communication. Everything knew that something had happened. And the bridges of New York and the subways, that's the lifeblood of New York, and New York is a very important place, certainly, to our country and the workings of it. They didn't do that. I think that was careless of them. Anyway,
considering they're just a bunch of guys who, you know, don't own an actual country and have a full-time military at their disposal, I say they did amazingly well at meeting their goals. But I appreciate your comments.
Will you?
I'll put you on hold.
Let me have a tape of that. That was wonderful. Thanks.
I'll put
Tommy.
You on hold. Kodiak, could you take care of that for me? And better feed me my next call. Our screen is down. I'm thinking it's a terrorist attack. Pat?
Yes, this is Pat.
Hi.
Tommy, is that you?
It really is.
Hi, great. Well, I've been going through a lot of stuff in my mind here. Thanks so much for mentioning, as I was leaving my church after I had been on my knees with probably 200 of us in my church, to put our country at the altar of God, who... this is what started this whole place here over across the pond. That's why they came, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Thanks for recognizing that fact. The caller before me, I wish she'd spend more energy in not trying to figure out a better way they could have done things, but to take it to God, the man in charge. Amazing, totally amazing to me that people are trying to figure out a better way they could have done this. Wow.
Well, I don't know. Her wheels were turning on this one. I don't know why she was analyzing it in that direction. People on a day like this have all sorts of goofy thoughts, and I think it's because it's a bit overwhelming. I'll tell you what I did today, just to give you an example about how overwhelming it is. I got the hell out of the house and threw a boat on the Mississippi and went up the Minnesota River. You know, the people respond to these things in different ways.
Yep.
Sometimes it's too much.
You got up the Minnesota with no planes going over your head, too, didn't you?
Well, I hated to mention that because it almost sounds like a little benefit. But
I know.
We do that
in my family as well, and you know, we're enjoying God's creation. I might add.
Well, thank you for praying.
I know that I'm in a church of committed Christians, and this is really where we need to put our energies, is give it to God. He's in charge, and he's handling this whole thing right now. And praise God to help George Bush right now figure it out, and Colin Powell and all the rest of them.
Thank you, Pat.
You're welcome. Right, I really appreciate your show and your views, your mind-broadening commentary. I appreciate you greatly.
All right, take care.
Good night.
Good evening. Good night. Linda.
Yes.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi, Tommy.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Linda.
Hi.
Okay, I wanted to narrow the conversation a little bit and focus a little more on what's going on right here, and in particular in relation to the economy and in a little more narrow even in gas prices. I'm driving from out in the western suburbs into the cities tonight, and I'm noticing every gas station I pass has lines wrapping out of the parking lot and down the streets, and I'm wondering if you have any input or information on what's going on with that.
So your take on it is the economy. You want to figure out what's going to happen there.
In particular, what's immediately going on with the gas stations and gas prices, and there's a lot of rumors.
I don't have a problem with you thinking in this direction, but I can't even think about it. I just can't even think about it because it just seems to me so petty. The price.
And that's what I kind of want to. Because I believe it's rumors. Is my point.
I don't care if it's $25 a gallon.
Exactly, but people seem to be lining up at these gas stations, and it seems that I believe it's rumor, and you know what's going on here with the American public in relation to why are they lining up at these gas stations, and
I think two things happen in instances like today. A large percentage of the population becomes extraordinarily selfless, and a large percentage becomes extraordinarily selfish. And those who are thinking solely about themselves are sitting down tonight planning out what they need to do to take care of themselves. And part of that involves perhaps hoarding some gas. I don't know. I don't give a damn about the gas.
I agree with you absolutely. I find it very bizarre.
It is bizarre. I can't. Maybe in a couple of weeks I can start thinking about that, but I can't think about it tonight. Thank you for your thoughts. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for yours also, right. Tommy, and I love your show.
Thanks. Bye bye. Okay. Hello, Guy.
Yeah, Tommy. This is Guy, alias Lost John.
Lost John, I remember you, sir.
Yeah, okay. To begin with, I was a tradesman, and there's such a thing as a mechanic and a craftsman. Now, in your speech tonight, you were a craftsman. That's a speech Bush should have given, I think. And it was beautiful.
Thank you.
And another thing I'd like to point out, we keep making the same mistakes as the people in command do. Whoever located their, you might say, the command center in New York and that tower, that wasn't too good thinking, was it? Here's a landmark. There was a terrorist attack. But anyway, we seem to keep making these mistakes. And as far as the gas prices, I agree with you. I don't care if it goes $25 a gallon.
Yeah, I think the primary thing, if people really sat down and thought about it tonight, the primary thing on everybody's mind is, okay, this happened today. Is there a way we can prevent this from being the story of this century, or are we going to go down a road where this is going to be just the beginning? That's where we got to focus, and there are a lot of ways to come at it. But that's the focus is we can't live out this century this way. This can't be the story of this century, or maybe it has to be. I don't know. But the focus has to be on how do we live in this country in a way where that isn't the constant worry, or where that isn't the story of every year some horrible event like this. And you talk about what George Bush should have said tonight. I don't envy him what he is up against. Roosevelt had it easy compared to George Bush. Easy. You know how easy it is when the country's right there and they're just sitting there waiting for you saying, come and get us. That was us at Pearl Harbor. It's so difficult now, and I don't have any advice for him, any tips, anything to offer other than what that woman said earlier. Pray that he gets guidance, because this is a messy thing to deal with. And you can tell that people aren't thinking clearly when they want to just start taking out Arabs, just flat out killing Arabs.
Yeah.
And that's, there's a lot of, they, you know, it was, they wanted to kill Japs back in, pardon me using the term Japs, but when I refer to World War II, that just was the term of the day, and they want, that's how they put it, and they wanted to take as many of them out as they possibly could. But at least in that instance, you had a country waving, saying, yeah, that was us, we did it, hello, declaration of war. Come on, let's get it on. We don't have that here. I don't know what the hell George W. Bush is going to do outside of become a better man. That I do know. Thank you.
It'll make him or break him, I think.
Yeah, I don't think it will break him. It can't. He's not going to allow it. You know, this is the kind of thing where a recovering or recovered alcoholic, however you want to put it, if he doesn't go back to drinking, it won't break him. But this is the kind of thing that could send a guy right back to the bottle if he wasn't... strong-willed enough. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, well, could I say one more thing?
Sure.
In the Bible, I don't know whether it's Solomon or Ecclesiastes, it said there's nothing new under the sun. That kind of sums up a lot what you said in your soliloquy there.
Yeah, that's another way of putting it.
Yep.
Thanks.
Thanks, Tommy.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hello, Kelly.
Hi, Tommy. How are you?
Good. Why is it I know that whenever I see Kelly up there, it's going to be you? There's not one other Kelly that ever calls my program.
Oh, really? I thought you had another Kelly at one time.
Every time I see Kelly, I say to myself, I'm going to hit that button, and I'm going to hear the voice of a 9-year-old, and she's actually going to be in her late 20s. And boom, you're on.
And here I am.
Yes.
Well, not as free-spirited tonight as other nights that I've called you.
No.
What a day for reflection.
Yeah, a day for a lot of things.
A lot of thinking.
A lot of for doing a lot of things differently than you did before. What I found is no matter what people did, it was mostly different from what they would have done. There were all sorts of reactions to this, but wherever I saw people, I just had a feeling that whatever they're doing right now or whatever, however they're going about it, it's not how they were going to go about it. It's not what they were going to do today. It isn't quite how this day was going to go for them. And so everywhere I looked, I sensed, even without knowing what people were talking about or what they ordinarily would have been doing, I sensed that everything was different in the behavior of people.
Yeah, you sensed a kind of a different state of mind.
Yeah.
A little bit of confusion, sorrow.
All those different reactions and all mixed together.
Yeah. I noticed it too, just even driving down the road. But I wanted to say... that woman that called, I called too. I just got home from going to the dentist, and gas stations from St. Paul up to Lionel Lakes all have lines going around the block.
Really?
And I think it's going on a rumor that started this afternoon.
Well, and
that prices are going to go through the roof tomorrow.
No, they're not going to hurt themselves by getting in line. And,
sure.
You know, if they want to do that, that's one way to spend the evening.
I did it, too. I happened to find a gas station. There was really no line and got in, got gas just to make sure. Well, actually, I was running on empty. I had to get gas, but decided to fill it up instead of only, you know, going halfway. So
I think...
Did you watch the proceedings of the day's events on TV today?
My wife woke me up this morning to tell me what had happened about 5 minutes after it had happened, and I leapt out of bed and ran down the stairs and watched for about an hour. And after about an hour, that was about all I could take. She remained glued to the television the remainder of the day, and I couldn't. I had to go do something differently. And let me tell you something. Today was a beautiful day.
It was, wasn't it?
Was it? A beautiful
Even
day.
In New York, it was a gorgeous
day.
Yeah,
and that can happen at the same time that it's a horrible day. It can still be a beautiful day while it's a horrible day. It happens all the time, every day on this planet. Every day it's a beautiful day and a horrible day. That's life. Thank you, Kelly.
All right, Tommy, have a great evening. I'll talk
you
to you soon.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's see. Dennis, you've been waiting a while. Where are you? There you are. Hi, Dennis.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I just think that you misrepresent a little bit Jason's remark. I don't think he means to say that Americans are the only important people in the world or necessarily even the most important people as much as he means to say we are the government's job, the U.S. government's job. Their first job is to protect us. We should be the most important people to them. That doesn't mean other people are necessarily unimportant.
But they're not as important if it comes to, for instance, you wouldn't really want to see us just bomb some Arab community with the justification that, yeah, there's going to be some loss of innocent life there, but it's not as important to us as American life, so we can justify it. Because that's the thinking that caused this in the first place. If Osama bin Laden cared as much for American children as his own children, we probably wouldn't have a bombing if it's this guy behind it. Somewhere along the line.
So some American held attitude justifies what they did today.
Somewhere along the line in
this world. We need to change our attitude or we're going to have planes flying into our buildings.
Somewhere along the line in this world, somewhere along the line, and it'll happen one day, a life on one part of the planet is going to be as important as your own child. And when that happens, it'll be a very pleasant place to live all over.
I believe that.
Yeah,
I believe what you just said, but I also believe that the United States government, their first responsibility is to protect the U.S. citizen.
Yeah, and I don't think they don't get that. I think every president understands
but,
that.
But I don't think that that means that other people are unimportant.
I think they're just as important as we are. Thanks for your call. We'll be back after the top of the hour. Stick around. I understand we have a guest after the top of the hour for a few minutes from New York. KSTP, good old St. Paul, big time Minneapolis.
From the bleak, barren inner city tarmac of University Avenue, we return to your radio road hazard. The Mischke Broadcast, transmitting live from the last 90 feet of St. Paul, courtesy of the Black Sheep Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the program. As if it wasn't a rough enough day, I just got a call from a rabbi friend of mine who informed me that a friend of ours, died about 3 hours ago, unexpectedly. And for those people out there who know this man, I will tell you, Larry Keegan, who has been on this show, died today. He was at a gas station and apparently slumped over from a heart attack. Doctors were unable to do anything, and he's gone. I believe he's, what was he, in his mid-50s? Larry Keegan, well known to a lot of folks in the Twin Cities. He was a quadriplegic. His claim to fame, besides being an inspiration to a lot of people because of his attitude toward life and his amazing ability to overcome medical problems time and time again, he was supposed to die many, many times. He had a diving accident as a young boy and broke his neck, I believe, down in Florida. His claim to fame, besides being this inspirational figure, was he was Bob Dylan's best friend. Childhood friend and lifetime friend. Traveled with Bob on tour quite a bit in his wheelchair. And so many strange things that Dylan comes out today with a brand new album, getting rave reviews all over the country, talking about it as the greatest thing to happen since his work in the 60s, and I'm sure he has been informed tonight that his old friend Larry Keegan, who we first got to know when they were young boys at a Jewish camp near the Twin Cities called Herzl Camp, that Larry's gone. And being a devout Jew, the idea is to bury the body as soon as possible, and in this particular case, that means a lot of his good friends all over the country won't be able to get here. because the airports are closed. This is a funeral that Dylan himself would surely have attended, along with other guys who grew up with him. There was a crew of guys who were buddies with Dylan in the early days. Larry, Louis Kemp, several others. I'm sure Dick Cohn, if he's out there listening, knows many stories, has told me many stories about those guys from the old days. Larry, well-known in the music community. Paul Metz, a good friend of his. A lot of people who play music in the Twin Cities knew Larry. So for those of you who did not know, it's worth passing this along because things will happen quickly. And there's a good possibility that the funeral will be sometime around 2 o'clock this afternoon. There are no details right now because there are complications, including the possibility of an autopsy. So at this point, can't give you any information regarding Larry's funeral, but call somebody you know, and eventually, hopefully, you'll find out. So, hell of a guy, Larry. I didn't know him well. I spent some time with him. Had him on the show once as a guest, and outside of that, maybe a dozen times, sat down with him. And he was one of those guys where after you left him, it was very hard to feel you had a problem. If that was his attitude, given his predicament, only able to move his head and living this way since childhood, and he had the greatest attitude in the world. He wrote a great song called, what was it, Ain't Got the Blues, I Ain't Feeling So Bad. So I wish I had that song. I'd play it, Larry singing that one. Larry Keegan died today. Those of you who know Larry, try and find out what you can about the funeral arrangements. They'll happen quickly sometime tomorrow. I don't think this is going to be postponed simply because people can't fly into town. Now, let's go back to the phones. This should be interesting. Hello, Rod.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, things are going.
I just wanted to give an atheist perspective. I've heard a lot of talk about God and God's hands, people coming from church. You know, we've got the president in prayer, many of our government leaders. And I just think it's time for Americans to wake up. And, you know, this wasn't God's hand before it happened. You know, where was God when these planes crashed? This is an insane man and his group are extremists. And what type of extremists? Religious extremists. This is going to start another holy war, and what's at the base of it? Religion. I don't see where religion is a positive entity anymore. It's played its course in history. Let's get rid of it and get on to the reality. I'm sorry to tell you this, folks, but there's no God. And
you know, one of the things that bothers me about a Christian fundamentalist is the way they kind of push their views on people and tell people to get off this or get off that and get on board with them, and you on the other extreme are just as hard to listen to. So we move on. And that view is a real popular one right now in this country, by the way. This might be a good time for you to maybe go to the Quetico on a canoe trip, spend some time up there. Let's see, who do we have? Rick.
Hello, Miss Yee.
Hi.
I just wanted to bring about my point this evening. I've been listening to the show quite often. I don't mean to take up much time on me, but I have 25 years old and I have plenty of time to listen to people's views. I'm kind of feeling a little upset, not really, all kinds of different aggressive emotions, but I have one thing that I think needs to be looked at and evaluated. It's the level of hate in the United States, and what I think makes this nation such a great nation is that all the racial racism and everything else that's being thrown around when things like this aren't happening, when something like this does happen, all of a sudden that guy you hate, you'll hate him and call him names, but I tell you what, in America you'll help that guy breathe if he's drowning. You'll save an animal. This is going to wake up a lot of people and bring out sides of people that they didn't even know was there. That's quite a few people to spend their lives. That's everything that happened in New York. And I just know from a, being kind of an arrogant person myself, this is kind of changing my thoughts, just being the guy that usually calls names and tells people off. I think that it's going to turn a lot of different sides open on people in America, and that's what we're going to stand for.
Give me an example of how this changed you, specifically.
Well, specifically, if I was to say, well, right now I think any of those, I don't know what religion, how to call them, but they're saying Negroes. That's what I really don't know the religion because there's so many of them, and the only way that I've been ever heard of them being known is that's what they've been called. I don't know how I'd look at them right now. I don't know how if I'd be able to stand next to that person if he went to my bank or whatever. Slow down a second.
You lost me. Could you start over? I don't...
Okay, well,
you lost me there.
For instance, a person that would call a person a name in America...
No, I want your specific change. What was the thing about Negroes?
Yes.
What's that?
I was trying to identify anybody that's Islamic, I guess I would say.
I don't think that's the term.
Yeah, neither do I. I'm pretty mixed up in the terms. But all I know is in America, there's a lot of hate, a lot of let's go blow up everybody.
Well, forget talking about Americans. I want to specifically talk about how this changed you, and then I'll move on. But what?
It changed me as in the fact that I normally wouldn't go and say to somebody, call them, let's say, a name.
You normally wouldn't do that.
Yes, I normally
would.
And
now you're
that.
Going to?
Well, no, I'm not going to because I'm realizing that if that person came down and needed me to save their life, I would ultimately put my life in front of that person, no matter what they looked like or who they were. And I can't say that for any other nation ever around. How it's changed me, Mishki, is I'm going to jump in and dive in no matter what. I ultimately know because I'm an American that I will put my life in front of my life to save another.
Okay. All right. Thanks,
and if
Rick.
10,000 people did that. This is more than a war. It's a way of change of life.
All right. Thank you, Rick.
Yep.
Sarah.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Good evening. First of all, I just wanted to let you know that I'm sorry about your loss today.
Oh. Well, thank you.
And I didn't know him, but knew a lot of kids that I went to school with that had several great summers at his camp. So
it wasn't his camp,
oh,
but
it
was a camp he attended. It's the same one Dylan attended,
and they
got to know each other there and ran around the city when they were younger
and caused
trouble and raised hell like all kids
like all kids do, huh?
And it's gonna be a tough one for Bob Dylan because this was a. Dylan wasn't a guy who had a lot of friends. He became famous very, very early in life,
mm-hmm.
and very difficult when that happens for you to trust people,
mm-hmm.
and you tend to go back to those people you knew prior to becoming famous, and there's a small, small, small group, and Larry
people.
Was one of those. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, strange how things happen on the same day.
Yeah.
I just wanted to call, and I didn't get a chance to listen to your show earlier this evening, but I was listening to you on my way home. Driving through Main Street of Osseo, Main Street of Maple Grove, that kind of area, noticed something strange about the 40 and 50 car pileups at the gas station and the police outside directing traffic.
If you asked me to list what I thought would change in the next few hours after today, I guess I would have put that about 5,000th on the list. I just wouldn't have come up with people lining up at gas stations.
I would have thought so, too, but I'll tell you what. I was listening earlier this evening to a talk show that somebody had called in from St. Louis and said that they were driving past a gas station that was charging $4.99 a gallon for premium gasoline, and that they were under the impression that they were doing price gouging and things like that and raising the prices.
See, here's another good thing that's going to come out of this. We're gonna appreciate more every mile.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to say, you know, this is so expensive. Let's really milk every tree we pass and every moment we're riding on these tires because we don't get as many anymore, can't afford them. Driving will become as appreciated as it was when we were first 16 years of age and found that it was glorious to drive a block.
And you couldn't drive that far because you didn't have any money at that time anyway.
That's right. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Mark. Mark?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah. Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Mark here.
Hi, go ahead, sir.
It's my birthday today, and everywhere I went, I wasn't having fun.
Sorry it worked out that way, but you know what? Every time there's a tragedy on this planet, it's somebody's birthday. Just the way it goes. Yeah. But you know what? It was also a beautiful day today for your birthday. And somewhere today, it wasn't reported, but somewhere something wonderful happened. And so it's not all bad. Okay? Okay. We were trying to get hold of Dan Connery, who is in New York, now works for this station, works with Ron Rosenbaum on the weekends, holding court, which follows a sports talk. And we have been trying to get a hold of him in New York. I have not been able to yet, but he is a former New York City police officer who is there visiting some friends. And we're going to try to reach him. But first, we're going to go to an update here from ABC News.
Bring the little water, Sylvie. Bring me little water now. Bring me little water, Sylvie. Every little once in a while. Don't you see me coming? Don't you see me now? Don't you see me coming? Every little once in a while. Bring me little water, Sylvie. Bring me little water now. Bring me little water, Sylvie. Every little once in a while. Bring it in a bucket, Sylvie. Bring it in a bucket now. Bring it in a bucket, Sylvie. Every little once in a while. Bring me little water.
Mishki broadcast.
Bring me little water now.
Taking your calls on the events of the day.
Bring me little water,
until 10 o'clock when Bob Davis will take over, give you his take, and take your calls as well. Virginie.
Hi. I want to thank you for that wonderful speech. I had my ear attached to the TV all day, and it was such a relief to hear your speech. You changed the whole day for us. So thank you again, because you are really a brilliant speaker.
Well, thanks for saying that.
I just wanted to mention quickly the Trojan horse of yesteryear was rolled into another country on wooden wheels, and the soldiers jumped out and captivated the whole country, and now we have the winged horse of today. And it shocked me to think about how New York will never get over that. Anytime they'll see any planes coming in from any direction, those people who have been terrified by this will always feel fear.
Mm-hmm.
It'll never leave them.
Imagine the flashbacks the folks in Oklahoma City had today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know it sounds really strange what's happening to us. Is hate working all of this into our future?
I don't think there's any more hate on the planet now than there was. A lot more people.
True, but we're having more ways of delivering death in a more powerful way every year that we...
Fortunately, is not actually a more powerful way. I'm far more concerned about a country having a nuclear weapon than I am their ability to hijack a plane and crash it into something. This was extremely effective in terms of the destruction, if that was your goal. But in general, the hijacking a plane and crashing it approach is not the one I'm going to worry about most in my lifetime or worry about for my children. It's that pesky little nuclear thing that more and more guys are getting. I wish we just had a world where people were hijacking planes. Thanks, Virginia.
Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Steve.
Hey, Mishki. How
Hi.
You doing?
Good.
Good. Say, make the comment that
talking to my mother today. Actually, she's stranded in L.A. In fact, she was flying from L.A. to New York today. And she was on Sun Country, so after about 3 hours, I stopped worrying about her. But anyway, she was kind of telling me about stuff that they do, that they train in on terrorism and hijacking.
Is your mother a flight attendant?
Yeah, she is. And I just said, so why couldn't the people that are sitting in the airplane think about, do they have a better chance of living by just totally kicking the living crap out of these people and killing them in the airplane? Or, you know, taking their chances and probably flying to some other country or some other area where the plane most likely doesn't have gas to get to. And she said that a lot of times there's not a successful jacking or a hijacking that happens. And most of them are fake. I mean, either everybody dies or if the plane actually does land, that negotiations, a lot of it doesn't work. And so I was thinking, you know, if I was on an airplane, you know, in a couple, like, usually it's three or more, that's...
What would you do?
Teach you?
What would you do?
I'd hate to be the first guy to get up and, you know, do nothing, or do something, and
but
everybody
you would,
else
huh?
doing nothing.
But you would get up and be the first one. Pretty sure about
would
that.
I? Oh, you know, this stuff like that. I was in law enforcement for 9 years.
Oh, right? Okay.
And stuff like that just, you know, no. I don't tolerate, so, yeah.
Okay. Well,
you know, I wouldn't mind being a hero. I'd love to be a hero. In fact, I encourage, maybe, are there heroes in, you know, the United States?
Yes.
You know, maybe a little vigilante? Or are we going to be wussies and not do anything? I mean...
Are you thinking clearly on this one, Steve? What's your hope that some vigilante will do what?
No, I'm just saying, you know, are we going to have a hero? Or are we just going to leave it up to somebody else?
Well, what is a hero in this particular instance?
We're going to take care of it, man.
How?
I don't know. Just wipe them out.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you something, and don't take this the wrong way, but your thinking on this is quite limited.
Yeah?
And I think it's limited, and I'm going to guess, but I think it's limited by a failure to spend enough time with the issue. I think you're reacting mostly out of just a sense of being pissed off.
Oh, yeah.
But the people who actually have to deal with this aren't going to have that luxury.
Yeah.
They're going to have to be wise, and that's a tougher thing to be.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's something...
Yeah, you just want someone to pay and pay now, and a lot of Americans do, but it's not going to work that way, unfortunately.
Well,
unfortunately. But if you want to get a vigilante posse together and play the hero, we'll read about you in the paper. Who do we have? Joel? David.
Hello.
Hi, David.
Hi.
Hi.
You know, I actually have never listened to your talk show, but I was on my way home this afternoon and now, and I heard you mention Larry Keegan. Larry's my stepfather, and it just sort of touched me knowing that... that he's touched so many people, and I wanted to thank you for mentioning his name.
Who's your mother?
Carol Krieger.
Okay. When did you find out about Larry's death?
About 5 o'clock, 5:30.
Okay.
Somewhere in those. It kind of is a bit of a blur, to be honest with you, but I think it was around that time.
How is your mother doing?
Surprisingly well. You know, it's difficult to handle something like that, but doing as well as I think she can.
Uh-huh.
I'll be going back over to spend some time with her in a little bit here, but not too bad. I was very touched by what he's. I mean, even the fact that he's touched so many people in this world, including me, that I hear his name on the radio. It was
One of the things I thought of after this friend of mine, Rabbi Kasowitz, called and told me about Larry dying today.
Mm-hmm.
First thing I thought was, what an extraordinary experience it must have been to get the hell out of that chair.
You know, well spoken. I'm sure he's much better off now, and to get out of the chair. He grew so accustomed to it, it was just part of him.
Yeah, just to have him out of there finally, free of that, gives me a little bit of a good feeling, but I will miss him. I have to go and take a break. Thank you, David. I expect to see you soon. All right.
I will. Thank
all right.
you.
Bye-bye. We have to take a break. We'll be back.
Now with the local news, Bob Berglund.
Thank you. It's 73 degrees in the Twin Cities and 932. An unexpected twist to today's events. AAA says gas prices across the country could go up after the attacks on the World Trade Center and Pentagon today. In fact, people are lining up at gas stations around the Twin Cities tonight, we're told. Similar reports are coming in from Wisconsin. State officials there say reports of $3 and $4 gas are unconfirmed. They say retailers hoarding gas and panic buying by consumers could force prices to rise. That is not a good reaction to today's thing. As an average Minnesotan sitting in the middle of the country, there isn't a whole lot you can do in a situation like today, but people quickly discovered one thing they could do was give blood, and they showed up in such unannounced numbers that blood banks had to turn them away today. But please make an appointment first if you would like to donate blood tomorrow, and if you'd really like to help, the St. Paul and Minneapolis Red Cross say they could use volunteer phone answerers. State Public Safety Commissioner Charlie Weaver oversaw the opening of a state emergency center in St. Paul today.
Terrorist attacks, by their very nature, are meant to disrupt government activities and to cause panic. The best way for Minnesota State employees and any member of the public to respond to this is to remain calm, as the governor said, vigilant, and continue to serve the public in a positive manner.
The emergency center will be open through tomorrow night. At the same time, we're beginning to see a return to normalcy. Many of the buildings and businesses that closed today will reopen tomorrow, the Mall of America, the IDS Center, among them. The airport is scheduled to reopen at 11 tomorrow morning, but airport officials warn it could be days yet before Twin Cities air traffic can be called normal. Tim Callister, the airport manager, says check ahead, check ahead, check ahead.
I believe that once that the carriers are cleared to fly again, it will take considerable time to get back to what we would consider normal, but when they are resumed and normal, that normal may change from what it was in the past.
In other words, the skies may reopen tomorrow, but it doesn't mean that all the planes will get out of here. There is other news tonight. Minneapolis Mayor Sharon Sales Belton has survived a vigorous primary challenge to move on to November's general election, with 84% of the precincts reporting. Sales Belton came in second to neighborhood activist R.T. Ryback by about 3,000 votes. About 70% of precincts reporting in the other council elections. Ward 2 incumbent Democrat Joan Campbell is in danger of not being one of the top two vote-getters who would get in November's general election. She trails Paul Zerbe and Cam Gordon by 6 and 7%. And in Ward 6, Green Party candidate Dean Zimmerman is in the top position. With 70% of the precincts reporting, there's only about 3% and 200 votes separating the top three. The Channel 5 forecast, partly cloudy, down to 57 tonight. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, breezy, and 72. 73 right now.
Get down. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
broadcast?
Yes, you know you got to tell I was wrong.
We have a caller in New York I want to get to. Jeff, Dave, Bill, and Brandon, hang tight. Dan Connery is out in New York. Dan, hello.
Hey, Tom. How are you, pal?
Well, I tell you, I want to ask you how you're doing. Did you know a lot of these folks who are missing and in many cases, I assume, presumed dead? I understand possibly some 70, 80 of your former compadres there are perhaps gone tonight.
It's not perhaps. It is a reality. We don't have a list yet of the names of the guys who are gone, but my list of people who I know is growing. And
Now, your list of people you personally knew there?
Yes.
And this is from the force?
Yes, and a couple of relatives I have not gotten word from yet. We are staying faithful. We're just keeping the faith because there's a lot of difficulty getting around town. And so we're just hanging in there. But, yeah, I've definitely lost a lot of friends on the NYPD today.
Dan Connery, a former New York police officer who now works here for KSTP and was out there visiting friends and family when this all occurred. Where were you when the, you know what, hit the fan today?
Right, right. I got a call right after the initial impact with the first plane. I was called, I'm in Staten Island, I should add. I was called down to the Staten Island District Attorney's Office, which looks right at the Manhattan skyline. It's right across the Hudson. You could not regrettably ask for a better vantage point to watch what was taking place. And to actually see those towers come down is just something that will live with embedded in my mind. And the difficulty I see people around me having with this is just unreal.
Kodiak mentioned to me that you have some new information that we perhaps don't have.
I don't know if you got it. You just might have, but there has been an arrest. Right by the Meadowlands Giant Stadium of two men. I don't have any description on them or who they are or what they are, with a truck loaded with explosives, and they have determined it was destined for the George Washington Bridge.
Really?
That's the word that we have now.
You know, it's extraordinary, and it shows how out of touch I can be on this stuff, but when I would hear later this afternoon about all these other precautions being taken and the notion that this is just the beginning and that there's more planned, I would think to myself, oh, come on, they're feeling damn lucky to have gotten away with this much. You know, now they're retreating. They don't have any more planned. They know they can't get away with any more. This is as big as it possibly could have been, isn't it? What more could they have planned to do? And here I'm dead wrong.
Tom, you know, I felt the same way. You know, I thought they made their point rather well this morning. And the personal aspect of what I'm dealing with today is people here on Staten Island. Anybody I run into seems to know somebody who works at the Trade Center. I see people waiting for their sons, their daughters, their husbands, their wives. And the body count is a conservative guess, and nobody's actually saying it on the air, is going to flirt with about 10,000. And look in the people's of their eyes, the people who are waiting for their loved ones to come home, and you know they're not coming home.
Well, you know, hearing that figure all day, I have not heard a figure. Everyone's been afraid
this
to throw it
under
out.
This is the table. Nobody wants to guess. And
right.
I'm speaking to law enforcement and fire department personnel. By the way, the fire department at
lost
a minimum
a couple
has probably
hundred.
Lost about 200 people.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of their quick reaction with the first impact.
And the raining down of the building
exactly.
on them, right? Yeah, that figure, just hearing it, even though I knew that we were looking at thousands, hearing that figure that's a hard one to hear. That's an extraordinary
that.
Number of human beings.
You can't process that.
No.
They're creating right now morgues on the west side. There's several piers. There's several covered piers on the west side. They're bringing a lot of the injured out of Manhattan through southern Manhattan through the Staten Island Ferry. And what you would see is people who were covered with dust. They looked like ghosts. And all you saw was women with no shoes on. It tells you the panic that was initially going on there.
What do the next 24, 48 hours hold for you? What are your plans?
I'm going to hang around. I just I need to find some find out about some people. I'm going to be here in town. I don't know if I have funerals to attend yet. I just don't know yet, Tom.
How many people do you need to find out about right now?
List about 5 or 6.
5 or 6 that you have tried to learn about today and have not been able to confirm are alive and healthy?
Nothing yet. And you know, the odds are I'll find most of those people. That's the way I got to keep thinking.
Right. Well, boy, I tell you, I feel for you, buddy. You're closer to that area than anyone else around here, and having been on the force and knowing so many of those people, I really you're the person who's had the who's had an experience with this that's most intimate experience with it today. Other people I've talked to today have all been shook, but no one had the connection that I'm hearing from you, and so it brings it home a little more.
And, you know what? I was at the 93 blast. I was allowed to go into the crater that was in the basement of the Trade Center, and this is going to be completely pale by comparison, quite honestly. This is going to be Oklahoma times 10.
Yeah. And, we had trouble getting through to you. I imagine that the...
On average, it takes me about 30 attempts to get... To get
anywhere.
An outside line to go along.
Wow.
And I have to tell you, the people who have been calling me or trying to call me from the Twin Cities, friends and loved ones in the Twin Cities, I thank you all very much. And the good wishes that I've gotten from good Minnesotans, I thank you all very much.
Well, I'm glad, damn glad you're healthy. We'll talk to you when you get back here.
Okay, buddy.
Take care and watch yourself. That story about the truck full of explosives spooks me a little bit in terms of where this thing is going.
I'm leaning to agree with you. Hey, send Rosie my best. Huh?
I will do that. Bye. Thanks, Dan. Bye-bye. That's Dan Conry. He works with Ron Rosenbaum on Saturdays, holding court at noon, former New York police officer who was stabbed in a drug bust and put on disability, left the force, and came here to Minnesota. And now... works here at KSTP and was out there visiting friends when all of this happened. And a couple hundred firemen have died, and I thought it was just under 170, 80 police officers missing, and Dan knew many of them. Brandon.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I've called a couple times here before. Try to give a younger person's perspective.
Sure. We haven't had... How old are you?
14.
We haven't had anyone under 18 call tonight. Go ahead.
Well, what I want to talk about is the reaction in the schools.
Okay.
The teachers are devastated.
The teachers what?
The teachers. They're devastated.
They're devastated.
Yeah, that's
and the students?
The kids, I somewhat wish they were.
It's pretty tough to expect that of them. It's tough to there's a funny thing in human nature, and it's a survival mechanism, and I suppose it's necessary. But you know, the closer it gets, the harder it is. New York is still a long ways away to a lot of kids. It's still tough for them to see it. As their experience, or as something even close to their experience, it's hard. Being able to empathize with people at long distances is almost something that comes with age and a certain maturity. So I don't know necessarily that's strange, and I don't think they've had much experience with this sort of thing. It could be probably more confusing than anything else. I know my kids. I had my little 6-year-old this morning when we were watching the television right after it happened, and the second plane hit. First thing he said is, "Dad, I think that one was a rescue plane. I think it was coming to help the people."
Oh.
And it just ran into the building. And I didn't have the heart to tell him that, no, there are actually folks who are angry enough to send a second one after the first one takes out who knows how many thousands. But he thought that second one was a rescue plane.
Wow.
Well, I imagine this will be the subject in school for a long time.
Yes, it will.
Well, Brandon, thanks for calling.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Jeff, go ahead.
Hey, Mishki. I think very highly of you, and you are hands down my favorite host on any radio station. so I hope you don't take offense to this question, but sometimes listening to you, I do wonder, and I hope I can just get an honest answer from you. It seems like you always feel sorry for everybody in the world except for a white Americans. Like, you feel sorry for the Indians because, you know, they lost in the war to the white people. You just feel sorry for black slaves, but not the Union soldiers that fought. You feel sorry for the Japanese in Hiroshima, but not the Americans that died. And today, I'm sure you care, but it comes across the same way, like, oh, there's people suffering all over the place. It's almost like we're supposed to apologize because I'm just an average white guy and white people died today. I mean, can you just explain to me? And I do mean that respectfully.
Well, yeah, I appreciate you asking it that way. Uh-huh. And I'll start out by asking you a question.
Sure.
What did I say today or what have I said in a derogatory way about white people as a group?
Well, I think if this would have happened, I think today you're almost brushing it off. I'm sure you're affected by it. I'm sure it bothers you. But I feel so confident that if an airplane landed on an Indian reservation today and killed 1,000 Indians, I bet you, boy, you would have opened up the show. We've got to talk about this. This is shocking. This is devastating. And today your opening monologue was just like, well, it happens everywhere. There's bad things that happen all the time. Like, we can't grieve because this wasn't, I think that's what gets us into this mess in the first place. We feel sorry for so many people except for ourselves.
Yeah, I would say that if you took that from the opening monologue, you missed a good deal of what I had to say. What I was saying with the opening monologue was, on a world stage, nothing changed today.
Okay, but let's not talk about today. Any of the other shows that you do where those bad old white people, they beat the Indians lost a war to us, but we're supposed to feel bad for the Indians. Those bad old white people beat the Indians. And I just think today is just a continuation of that. And I do respect you, and I'm sorry for the loss of your friend today. I know it's a bad time and even mention this, but I'm very hurt right now what happened today, and it just seems like, let's feel sorry for them for any time that we've killed any of the, you know, innocent people anywhere else.
Well, I'm sorry that you took it that way, because that's not what I intended, and I certainly, I think one of the things that doesn't come up very often in society in America is huge stories that come across the paper about the continuing struggles of white people, and consequently it perhaps doesn't come up as a subject on the air that I can address, where I'll read a story and say, well, another bad day for white folks in America as their continuing struggle goes on. I don't have much fodder to play with along those lines, so perhaps you don't hear me often enough talk about situations where I might support or defend white folks. There just aren't a lot of stories that have to do with the continuing problems and troubles and sacrifices and pain and suffering of whites. It doesn't come across in stories, or there isn't any issue that surrounds specifically whites. So I don't know how to ever address that to make you feel better. In this particular case today, I would bet, given that it's New York City and the World Trade Center, that the death of 10,000 people, if that's the figure, is not the death of 10,000 white people.
I agree.
So I think that assumption on your part that we're dealing with white people today is a little odd also.
I never said that. I'm sure there's people of every race, but I just have a feeling if this happened in another country, I honestly feel that
this happens in other countries all the time.
Okay.
I live quite comfortably, as all of us do, with the devastation of attacks in Sierra Leone and amputations of children, and I never talk about screw the network deal, Kodiak. I never talk about the issues in the Middle East where I take a particular stand on it. I never talk about situations in Northern Ireland where I take a particular stand on. There's all sorts of pain and suffering that happens all over the world that I don't get involved in. So your idea that if it happened outside these borders, I'd make a story out of it. The fact is, I just did 2 hours on this, and I wouldn't have done it if it didn't happen in this country. So you're wrong there.
There's nothing to be wrong about. I have an opinion, and I respect your answer. I just have an opinion. There's nothing to be wrong about.
Well, the wrong is your assumption that if it happened outside these borders of our country, I'd be real concerned about it. See, that's not just an opinion. You're telling me something I would feel, and I'm telling you you're wrong in thinking I'd feel that way. But there is a lot of, with the audience here at KSTP, there is a lot of feeling like yours that the people who have been shit on the most in the last 20 years in this country are white folks. And there is a real desire on a lot of conservatives' part to begin looking at what can be done to help white people. It's not a concern of mine. I don't get up every day and worry about the white folk. I think they're doing pretty well. I think, by and large, they're doing all right. Unless you happen to be in New York City today and anywhere near the World Trade Center. What else do we have? Dave.
Hey.
Go ahead.
Sorry for your loss.
Oh, thanks for that.
And I'm sorry for all the folks here in the United States that have had a loss. And I know that there's a lot of folks that are looking for retribution.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe there's any retribution that can heal the loss.
No, but there is an ability to see justice through. There isn't going to be an ability to make a family in New York feel just peachy because Osama bin Laden is taken out. But there is an ability to prevent this from happening again, where the blood's on his hands, and there is the ability to see consequences for actions and see justice. But no, there's not an ability to make things right again.
If he's the reason that this happened, God Almighty, I don't think the United States will ever be able to recover. Although we're very strong.
Oh, we've recovered from much. We recovered from the Civil War, for God's sake. We can recover from that. We can recover from anything.
As where I sit at 57, 58.
Yeah.
Thinking much about World War II, doing a bit in Vietnam, this thing is the biggest crisis that's ever in the United States.
Yeah, I'll give you that it's the let's see, how could I put it, biggest post World War II crisis we've faced.
Well, I'm kind of homebound,
mm-hmm.
and I had surgery. So last Friday, that was the surgery, and time to get out. I took a drive this morning, watching all the cars gassing up. This is the craziest.
Your phone's breaking up on us. I'm going to move on just because I have a tough time with those phones. Joel.
Yes.
Hi, go ahead.
Oh, wow. This is the first time I've ever done this. My question to you is, maybe not a question, but a statement, along the lines of, this isn't necessarily the first time I've seen this. Now, being with the cliche of so many, say, guy movies out there, where there's been so many scenes with plane crashes and exciting plane scenes, and seeing these real-life images of a plane flying into a building, there's been movies showing things similar to this. And so when I see this plane, and in so many angles now, as you watch TV further, fly into this building, I'm shocked that this is the truth, but yet, this overused cliche, or this overused saying by so many people saying how surreal everything is, I believe that it's real. But again, everyone keeps talking about how it's going to take so much time for it to soak in and set in to everybody. I'm shocked by what happened today, and obviously my other point is angered by what happened today. But again, what do you feel like the impact of this movie industry and how things? And again, I'm not trying to downplay what happened today, but I'm saying that this isn't the first time I've seen a plane crash into a building, but this is the first time I've seen a plane crash into a building that is real. And the loss of life and everything like this, and how maybe we see these things in movie for entertainment value, and how we're entertained by the fact that a plane flew into a building, and
right,
and how exciting,
right,
and explosions and all this stuff, and all of a sudden, boom, it actually happens, and there is explosions, and oh, for God's sake, and how we all tune into the fact that, like, the kingdom gets blown down, and they blow up buildings to get rid of to make room for new, and yet all these things we've seen before, but yet this is the first time we've seen something like this happen.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying.
And I guess maybe I'm having a hard time absorbing it. I'm still sitting here on my porch with my two dogs going, did this really happen today? And I guess it's hard for me to start to absorb And am I going to wake up in the morning different? But I mean, what's your thought on something like that and the effect?
I agree. I don't think we're built to be able to have something like this occur before our eyes and take it in and process it and in a healthy manner be done with it in a matter of hours and have a firm idea on how we feel about it and think about it and on to the next issue. We're not built for that. It'll take days, weeks, months for the people who are intimately connected with what happened today, a lifetime. So don't be surprised that this is the way you feel so early. I expect this to be the way you feel for quite some time.
And then again, again to reiterate, it's, you'll see a really cool movie, and I'll tell my buddy, dude, it was so cool. There was all these things, this and this and this and this, and
yeah.
You're excited to tell him this, but now this happens, and.
Yeah.
And it's like you're talking about this, and it's the same exact situation.
But it's without. I don't know necessarily that you have to feel that bad about enjoying a movie. I mean, I laughed when Moe and Curly whacked each other over the head with a pipe wrench. But if you ever did that to my wife, I'd have a different take on it.
Exactly.
So appreciate your call.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks. And Don, we'll wrap it up with you. Go ahead.
Hey, Tommy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm driving home from work tonight, and there's like 20 cars in line for gas at the gas station. Just, am I missing something here or what?
You didn't hear? You get gas tonight, or you don't get gas for the rest of the year, pal.
Is that what it is?
That's the story. You better get
all
in
right.
line or buy a bike.
I'm getting in line now, Tommy.
All right, see you later.
Thanks.
Oh. One thing I hope every American gets to do at least once today or tomorrow or the next day is cry. If you haven't done that yet, there's good reason to, and there's really no gain that I can think of in holding back. These victims deserve tears. We're human and should let ourselves feel this. If you can't today, that's fine. I understand that. If you can't tomorrow, maybe the next day, but at some point, let yourself feel it, and let what comes after that come. Cry, scream, wail. Let pour out of you the horror that's been poured into you. Cry with your kids, cry with your wife, cry alone. Don't hold anything back. These people out east and elsewhere have that much coming. The term compassion, the one our president has used so much, actually means to suffer with. And that would be, I think, a healthy thing to do, is to suffer with the people who have been victimized by this as much as possible, to suffer with them. And one last thing, don't stop laughing. Don't stop laughing. I'm not going to. Don't stop enjoying beautiful September sunny days. Hanging out with your friends. Don't stop looking at flowers and smiling. Don't stop tossing footballs to your kids and being damn glad you're alive. If you stop any of this, any of it, then the bad guys win. And they can never win. On that note, I'm going to get out of here and let Bob Davis take over. It's good that they just let the talk hosts have a couple hours with this and then move on. I don't think we could handle more than that. This is KSTP here in good old St. Paul, big time Minneapolis. Best you can tonight, sleep well.